Chapter 24. Off again, and they would take care, and see semicolon so away they went. I entreated them to consider the ship and the voyage, that their lives were not their own, and that they were entrusted with the voyage, in some measure, that if they miscarried, the ship might be lost for want of their help, and that they could not answer for it to God or man. But I might as well have talked to the mainmast of the ship. They were mad upon their journey, only they gave me good words, and begged I would not be angry, that they did not doubt, but they would be back again in about an hour at furthest. For the Indian town, they said, was not above half a mile off, though they found it above 2 miles, before they got to it. Well, they all went away, and though the attempt was desperate, and such as none, but madmen would have gone about, yet, to give them their due, they went about it as warily as boldly. They were gallantly armed, for they had every man a fusee or musket, a bayonet, and a pistol. Some of them had broad cutlasses, some of them had hangers, and the boatswain and two more had polyaxes. Besides all which they had among them 13 hand grenados. Bolder fellows, and better provided, never went about any wicked work in the world. When they went out their chief design was plunder, and they were in mighty hopes of finding gold there, but a circumstance which none of them were aware of set them on fire with revenge, and made devils of them all. When they came to the few Indian houses which they thought had been the town, which was not above half a mile off, they were under great disappointment, for there were not above 12 or 13 houses, and where the town was, or how big, they knew not. They consulted, therefore, what to do, and were some time before they could resolve, for if they fell upon these, they must cut all their throats, and it was 10 to 1, but some of them might escape, it being in the night, though the moon was up. And if one escaped, he would run, and raise all the town, so they should have a whole army upon them. On the other hand, if they went away, and left those untouched, for the people were all asleep, they could not tell which way to look for the town. However, the last was the best advice, so they resolved to leave them, and look for the town as well as they could. They went on a little way, and found a cow tied to a tree. This, they presently concluded, would be a good guide to them, for, they said, the cow certainly belonged to the town before them, or the town behind them, and if they untied her, they should see which way she went. If she went back, they had nothing to say to her, but if she went forward, they would follow her. So they cut the cord, which was made of twisted flax, and the cow went on before them, directly to the town, which, as they reported, consisted of above 200 houses or huts, and in some of these they found several families living together. Here they found all in silence, as profoundly secure as sleep could make them. And first, they called another council, to consider what they had to do, and presently resolved to divide themselves into 3 bodies, and so set 3 houses on fire in 3 parts of the town. And as the men came out, to seize them, and bind them if any resisted, they need not be asked what to do then, and so to search the rest of the houses for plunder. But they resolved to march silently first through the town, and see what dimensions it was of, and if they might venture upon it or no. They did so, and desperately resolved that they would venture upon them. But while they were animating one another to the work, 3 of them, who were a little before the rest, called out aloud to them, and told them that they had found Tom Jeffrey. They all ran up to the place, where they found the poor fellow hanging up naked by one arm, and his throat cut. There was an Indian house just by the tree, where they found 16 or 17 of the principal Indians, who had been concerned in the fray with us before, and 2 or 3 of them wounded with our shot. And our men found they were awake, and talking one to another in that house, but knew not their number. The sight of their poor mangled comrade so enraged them, as before, that they swore to one another that they would be revenged, and that not an Indian that came into their hands should have any quarter. And to work they went immediately, and yet not so madly as might be expected from the rage and fury they were in. Their first care was to get something that would soon take fire, but, after a little search, they found that would be to no purpose, for most of the houses were low, and thatched with flax and rushes, of which the country is full, so they presently made some wildfire, as we call it, by wetting a little powder in the palm of their hands, and in a quarter of an hour they set the town on fire in four or five places, and particularly that house, where the Indians were not gone to bed. As soon as the fire begun to blaze, the poor frightened creatures began to rush out to save their lives, but met with their fate in the attempt, and especially at the door, where they drove them back, the boatswain himself killing one or two with his pollux. The house being large, and many in it, he did not care to go in, but called for a hand grenado, and threw it among them, which at first frightened them, but, when it burst, made such havoc among them, that they cried out in a hideous manner. In short, most of the Indians who were in the open part of the house, were killed or hurt with the grenado, except two or three more who pressed to the door, which the boatswain and two more kept, with their bayonets on the muzzles of their pieces, and dispatched all that came in their way. But there was another apartment in the house, where the prince or king, or whatever he was, and several others were, and these were kept until the house, which was by this time all in a light flame, fell in upon them, and they were smothered together. All this while they fired not a gun, because they would not waken the people faster than they could master them, but the fire began to waken them fast enough, and our fellows were glad to keep a little together in bodies. For the fire grew so raging, all the houses being made of light combustible stuff, that they could hardly bear the street between them. Their business was to follow the fire, for the surer execution. As fast as the fire either forced the people out of those houses which were burning, or frightened them out of others, our people were ready at their doors, to knock them on the head, still calling and hallooing one to another to remember Tom Jeffrey. While this was doing, I must confess I was very uneasy, and especially when I saw the flames of the town, which, it being night, seemed to be close by me. My nephew, the captain, who was roused by his men seeing such a fire, was very uneasy, not knowing what the matter was, or what danger I was in, especially hearing the guns too, for by this time they began to use their firearms. A thousand thoughts oppressed his mind concerning me and the supercargo, what would become of us, and at last, though he could ill spare any more men, yet not knowing what exigence we might be in, he took another boat, and with 13 men and himself came ashore to me. He was surprised to see me, and the supercargo in the boat with no more than 2 men. And though he was glad that we were well, yet he was in the same impatience with us to know what was doing, for the noise continued, and the flame increased. In short, it was next to an impossibility for any men in the world to restrain their curiosity to know what had happened, or their concern for the safety of the men. In a word, the captain told me he would go and help his men, let what would come. I argued with him, as I did before with the men, the safety of the ship, the danger of the voyage, the interests of the owners and merchants, and see and told him I, and the 2 men would go, and only see, if we could at a distance learn what was likely to be the event, and come back and tell him. It was in vain to talk to my nephew, as it was to talk to the rest before. He would go, he said. And he only wished he had left but 10 men in the ship, for he could not think of having his men lost for want of help. He had rather lose the ship, the voyage, and his life, and all, and away he went. I was no more able to stay behind now than I was to persuade them not to go, so the captain ordered 2 men to row back the pinnace, and fetch 12 men more, leaving the long boat at an anchor. And that, when they came back, 6 men should keep the 2 boats, and 6 more come after us, so that he left only 16 men in the ship. For the whole ship's company consisted of 65 men, whereof 2 were lost in the late quarrel which brought this mischief on. Being now on the march, we felt little of the ground we trod on, and being guided by the fire, we kept no path, but went directly to the place of the flame. If the noise of the guns was surprising to us before, the cries of the poor people were now quite of another nature, and filled us with horror. I must confess I was never at the sacking a city, or at the taking a town by storm. I had heard of Oliver Cromwell taking Drogheda, in Ireland, and killing man, woman, and child, and I had read of Count Tilly sacking the city of Magdeburg, and cutting the throats of 22,000 of all sexes, but I never had an idea of the thing itself before, nor is it possible to describe it, or the horror that was upon our minds at hearing it. However, we went on, and at length, came to the town, though there was no entering the streets of it for the fire. The first object we met with was the ruins of a utter house, or rather the ashes of it, for the house was consumed, and just before it, plainly now to be seen by the light of the fire, lay four men and three women, killed, and, as we thought, one or two more lay in the heap among the fire. In short, there were such instances of rage, altogether barbarous, and of a fury something beyond what was human, that we thought it impossible our men could be guilty of it, or, if they were the authors of it, we thought they ought to be every one of them put to the worst of deaths. But this was not all. We saw the fire increase forward, and the cry went on just as the fire went on, so that we were in the utmost confusion. We advanced a little way farther, and behold, to our astonishment, three naked women, and crying in a most dreadful manner, came flying as if they had wings, and after them 16 or 17 men, natives, in the same terror and consternation, with three of our English butchers in the rear, who, when they could not overtake them, fired in among them, and one that was killed by their shot, fell down in our sight. When the rest saw us, believing us to be their enemies, and that we would murder them as well as those that pursued them, they set up a most dreadful shriek, especially the women, and two of them fell down, as if already dead, with the fright. My very soul shrunk within me, and my blood ran chill in my veins, when I saw this, and, I believe, had the three English sailors that pursued them come on, I had made our men kill them all. However, we took some means to let the poor flying creatures know that we would not hurt them, and immediately they came up to us, and kneeling down, with their hands lifted up, made piteous lamentation to us to save them, which we let them know we would. Whereupon they crept all together in a huddle close behind us, as for protection. I left my men drawn up together, and, charging them to hurt nobody, but, if possible, to get at some of our people, and see what devil it was possessed them, and what they intended to do, and to command them off, assuring them that, if they stayed till daylight they would have 100,000 men about their ears. I say I left them, and went among those flying people, taking only two of our men with me, and there was, indeed, a piteous spectacle among them. Some of them at their feet terribly burned with trampling and running through the fire. Others their hands burned. One of the women had fallen down in the fire, and was very much burned, before she could get out again, and two or three of the men had cuts in their backs and thighs, from our men pursuing, and another was shot through the body and died, while I was there. I would fain have learned what the occasion of all this was, but I could not understand one word they said. Though, by signs, I perceived some of them knew not what was the occasion themselves. I was so terrified in my thoughts at this outrageous attempt, that I could not stay there, but went back to my own men, and resolved to go into the middle of the town, through the fire, or whatever might be in the way, and put an end to it, cost what it would. Accordingly, as I came back to my men, I told them my resolution, and commanded them to follow me, when, at the very moment, came four of our men, with the boatswain at their head, roving over heaps of bodies they had killed, all covered with blood and dust, as if they wanted more people to massacre, when our men hallooed to them as loud as they could halloo, and with much ado one of them made them hear, so that they knew who we were, and came up to us. As soon as the boatswain saw us, he set up a halloo like a shout of triumph, for having, as he thought, more help come, and without waiting to hear me, Captain, says he, noble captain, I am glad you are come, we have not half done yet. Villainous hellhound dogs. I'll kill as many of them as poor Tom has hairs upon his head. We have sworn to spare none of them, we'll root out the very nation of them from the earth. And thus he ran on, out of breath too, with action, and would not give us leave to speak a word. At last, raising my voice, that I might silence him a little, barbarous dog, said I, what are you doing? I won't have one creature touched more, upon pain of death. I charge you, upon your life, to stop your hands, and stand still here, or you are a dead man this minute. Why, sir, says he, do you know what you do, or what they have done? If you want a reason for what we have done, come hither. And with that he showed me the poor fellow hanging, with his throat cut. I confess I was urged then myself, and at another time, would have been forward enough. But I thought they had carried their rage too far, and remembered Jacob's words to his son Simeon and Levi. Cursed be their anger, for it was fierce, and their wrath, for it was cruel. But I had now a new task upon my hands. For when the men I had carried with me saw the sight, as I had done, I had as much to do to restrain them as I should have had with the others. Nay, my nephew himself fell in with them, and told me, in their hearing, that he was only concerned for fear of the men being overpowered. And as to the people, he thought not one of them ought to live. For they had all glutted themselves with the murder of the poor man, and that they ought to be used like murderers. Upon these words, away ran eight of my men, with the boatswain and his crew, to complete their bloody work, and I, seeing it quite out of my power to restrain them, came away pensive and sad, for I could not bear the sight, much less the horrible noise and cries of the poor wretches that fell into their hands. I got nobody to come back with me, but the supercargo and two men, and with these walked back to the boat. It was a very great piece of folly in me, I confess, to venture back, as it were, alone, for as it began now to be almost day, and the alarm had run over the country, there stood about 40 men armed with lances, and bows at the little place, where the 12 or 13 houses stood, mentioned before. But by accident I missed the place, and came directly to the seaside, and by the time I got to the seaside it was broad day. Immediately I took the pinnace, and went on board, and sent her back to assist the men in what might happen. I observed, about the time that I came to the boat's side, that the fire was pretty well out, and the noise abated. But in about half an hour after I got on board, I heard a volley of our men's firearms, and saw a great smoke. This, as I understood afterwards, was our men falling upon the men, who, as I said, stood at the few houses on the way, of whom they killed 16 or 17, and set all the houses on fire, but did not meddle with the women or children. By the time the men got to the shore again with the pinnace, our men began to appear. They came dropping in, not in two bodies as they went, but straggling here and there in such a manner, that a small force of resolute men might have cut them all off. But the dread of them was upon the whole country, and the men were surprised, and so frightened, that I believe 100 of them would have fled at the sight of, but 5 of our men. Nor in all this terrible action was there a man, that made any considerable defense. They were so surprised between the terror of the fire, and the sudden attack of our men in the dark, that they knew, not which way to turn themselves. For if they fled one way they were met by one party, if back again by another, so that they were everywhere knocked down. Nor did any of our men receive the least hurt, except one that sprained his foot, and another that had one of his hands burned. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.